When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Laughing, telling jokes, I forgot how the punchline goes. Picking on that talk of me, someone pass the whiskey. Summer nights in Ohio, hell, that's all I know. We'll talk about Jesus, we'll talk about leaving this little town. I know somehow some of us are never gonna leave it. Nashville, Tennessee, and New York City shoot like the gas burned through on the fire. The dreams went up in smoke.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to Ohio Mysteries. You're listening to a clip of Ohio, That's All I Know, by Brown County's Noah Smith. Noah is our featured Ohio musical artist tonight, so stick around to the end of the podcast. We're going to tell you a little bit more about him, let you hear the rest of that song. But right now, let's throw another log on the fire, campers. I'm your co-host, Steve Yoder, and with me is our researcher and storyteller, Paula Schleiss, an award-winning journalist who spent 30 years telling these kinds of stories for the Akron Beacon Journal.
Hi, everyone. So, Steve, earlier this year, we met Michael Bonanno, a Broadview Heights man with a really interesting hobby. He travels to cemeteries all around the state, taking pictures of himself with grave markers of famous Ohioans. Then he posts these pictures, along with a short story about who they are, on his Facebook page, Too Late for Autographs. He's been doing this for 5 years, and followers of his Facebook page have gotten a real unique history lesson about who is buried in Ohio. Well, Michael has given us a lot of great ideas for episodes, and he's going to join us today because sometimes the mystery is the gravesite itself. Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Paula, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Listen, before we get into these mysteries, and we're going to do a different template today, where I'm going to tell you a short story about each of five mysteries, and then Michael's going to weigh in on them. But why don't you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself and what inspired you to get started in this hobby?
Well, like you mentioned, I'm from Broadview Heights, about 10 miles south of Cleveland. I've been in the screen printing industry for like 30-some years, printed a lot of shirts for rock bands, for sports teams, currently print for Kent State and Baldwin Wallace, Bowling Green. So, you know, I got into this, I guess, probably started with my fifth grade teacher, Mrs. Paller, still remember her name, casually mentioned one day in class that she was cousins with Paul Newman. And I'm like, wow, I actually know somebody who knows Paul Newman personally. You know, and then you see an Ohioan walking on the moon, you know, Neil Armstrong, and, you know, all these presidents are buried here. And I'm thinking, who else is buried here? You know, and Facebook is a great format or launching pad to show these stories, you know. So it's really, honestly, what I think really got me going was I worked at a place called the Front Row Theater. We had people like, you know, Bob Hope and Sammy Davis Jr. back in the day. And I was just amazed at all these famous people that came through there. I met a lot of them. They all had connections to Ohio, you know, Bob Hope being from here, and George Carlin's wife is from Ohio. Wayne Newton's wife is from Ohio. Pat Benatar's husband's from Ohio. Just all these people from Ohio had, you know, there's all kinds of connections with that. Do you remember Liberace?
Oh, yeah.
His business manager was from Cleveland, went to Glenville High School with the guys who created Superman back in the 30s.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, there's just so many connections here. And so, I don't know, it just makes me think of all the history that's in this state that nobody knows about, or may not know about, I should say. And just, it's all in our backyard, and just trying to get people to hear and know about it. That's all.
There you go. Well, listen, we've got five gravesite mysteries to explore, so let's get started. Mystery number one is the Merchant Ball. Now, Charles Merchant was a well-known industrialist in Marion. That's North Central Ohio. So not surprisingly, when he died, his grave in Marion Cemetery was marked in proportion to someone of his standing. There's a large 5-foot-tall pedestal topped with a 5,200-pound polished black granite orb. It was installed in 1896. Now, on this shiny sphere is a small, dull gray circle. I'm guessing it was where the ball rested as the rest of it was being polished. But no worries, you can't see it when you install the ball on the pedestal. Well, at least you're not supposed to see it. But 2 years after the ball was installed, the family got a surprise. They saw that the gray spot was now on the side of the orb. This ball, which in no way could be moved by human hands, had somehow spun on its pedestal. Now, the ball hadn't been secured. Everyone expected gravity to keep a 5,200-pound boulder in its place. Still, the family didn't like that this bald spot was visible. So they had a crane brought in, lifted the ball, spun the gray spot back to the bottom, and this time secured it to the pedestal with a dollop of tar. It didn't matter. The ball moved again, and it's still moving. Not fast, mind you, and not always at the same rate. Back in the early 1900s, the cemetery recorded that the spot had moved to 5 inches in 7 months. The current cemetery caretakers have said in recent years, it's moving anywhere from 1/4 inch to 2 inches a year. At any rate, that sucker has really gotten around over the past century. There are pictures showing this bald spot near the top of the orb, others showing it on the side, others near the bottom. And the sphere has become quite the tourist attraction. Experts have even come out to do seismic and gravitational research on it. It's rare that you feel them, but Ohio has earthquakes happening all the time. So could those tiny vibrations be responsible? Of course, paranormal investigators have weighed in, going out to the cemetery to set up ghost detecting equipment. Others have voted in favor of the idea of water freezing and thawing in the tiny divot where the ball rests on its base. Others have voted in favor of the idea of water freezing and thawing in the tiny divot where the ball rests on its base. Michael, they have not figured out what is causing this ball to move. What do you think?
Boy, you know what? There's so many sites about this thing online, obviously. I read some of the comments on one of them, and somebody from Bucyrus, Ohio, said that there are similar granite balls in cemeteries around there, not as big as the merchant one. But they said that the pedestals are also have divots in them at the top, and there's water collecting in these little divots. And they can go up to these balls and slightly move them with their hand. The water is like a great lubricant for that. And,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so that made me think that that seems like the most logical explanation, you know, for the merchant ball, is that that water, you know, underneath on the pedestal in the divot there.
Do you think these balls they were moving were as big as this one? Because, man,
I can't even imagine the amount
of water. Yeah. I mean, if you threw a 5,200 boulder into a pool, I think it would still be kind of hard to move.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. There are other balls, one almost as big as the merchant in Marion Cemetery, and it doesn't move. There's one that in particular that doesn't move. That's almost as big as that one. Interestingly, though, the family plot there is the grave sites. There's 7 or 8 family members buried in this plot where the sphere is. And all their grave sites are miniature granite balls. And they're secured to probably a different kind of base, but, you know, they're only a few inches from the ground.
Yeah.
But they're about as big as bowling balls. They don't move. Now, whether, you know, because you mentioned the seismic activity or something like that, but these balls don't move. Now, they could be secured in a different way, maybe a rod up the middle of the ball holding it in place, you know, instead of the pedestal. So maybe that's why they don't move.
How interesting. The big one that shouldn't be moving is moving, and these little ones aren't.
Yeah. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but yeah, I kind of lean towards, you know, it's funny that this thing's been moving for like 120 years or whatever it's been, and there's no real story attached to it as far as a haunting, you know, or a paranormal thing, you know, like one of the merchant family members, this happened, so they're moving the ball because this had, you know, there's nothing like that. There's no solid, there's just that there's a paranormal activity going on there that's causing the ball to move, but no, nothing specific about it. Now, you think after 120 years, they might have invented a story by now about that.
True. I'm not going with the haunting. I would vote for the freezing and thawing, because if you've got ice, the sun's going to hit it on one side. And if that ice thaws before the other side, I could see that ball just very slightly leaning down and causing it to go up. What astounds me is that the amount of ice that could possibly be in that tiny divot could be enough to actually lift this 5,200-pound ball.
There you go.
That's crazy.
And there's the mystery, right?
Have you been inside the IX Center lobby lately?
No.
They have a big, giant granite ball that's bigger than the merchant, and it's sitting in a pool of water, and you can go up to it and spin it.
Oh, you're kidding!
Yeah,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay. Well, there you go. Maybe
everything
that's all
it is. Everything
comes
back to the water.
That's right.
I don't know. Just as a side note on the merchant thing, I called this Marion Cemetery just to get some information on Charles Merchant that all these websites mention is buried there and I asked if they could look up the burial records of him, and they couldn't find him. She's like, there's no Charles Merchant buried in this family plot. And I go, well, that's what everybody mentions as far as a name. She goes, well, let me, and she starts digging some more. She goes, I have a Christian Benner. Christian Benner was the name, who lived from 1846 to 1916. And, on the bottom of the pedestal, there's a CB Merchant engraved into the pedestal.
Right.
I don't know if you've seen any pictures of this.
I did.
Yeah, so I'm thinking, well, is it really Christian Benner? And they just got the name wrong? Somebody got the name wrong? She goes, no, wait a minute here. I have a CB Merchant buried there. That could be Charles. I go, yeah, it could be. What's the dates on his birth and death dates? And she goes, they're not there. I go, you don't have any? She goes, no, that means it's a really old burial. So I'm thinking, okay, well, if Christian was born in 1846, maybe the father is Charles, who was born, who knows, around 1820. He'd probably be at least 20 years older than Christian if that's his son. So I'm thinking maybe he died in 1896 when this monument was put up, and that's why they don't have the, I don't know why they don't have the dates though, but it's kind of crazy. Just a little mystery inside of a mystery.
A mystery inside of a mystery. I tried to look up stuff about Charles Merchant's life, and I could not easily find any kind of biography on him online.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
Well, so, you're right. Mystery within a mystery. All right, Michael, let's go to mystery number two, the grave of Jakosat. Now, Jakosat was a chief of the Fox Indian tribe from the Minnesota area. He fought in the Black Hawk War against the U.S. back in 1831 and was wounded in that war. But later, when peace reigned, he made his way to Cleveland and settled down there. And that's where he met vaudeville promoter Dan Marble, and he joined his theatrical troupe, traveling throughout the country in plays that were supposed to represent Native American life. In March of 1844, Jakosat even traveled to England, where he met Queen Victoria, who was so impressed by him that she commissioned a portrait of him by her royal lithographers. That trip did not end well, though. Jakosat fell ill, possibly with tuberculosis, and he wanted desperately to get back to Minnesota so he could be buried with his people. But he only made it as far as Cleveland. He died there at the age of 34 and was buried in Erie Street Cemetery, the city's oldest cemetery, which is across the street from where the Cleveland Indians play. Now, there are a couple of reasons why people believe his grave is haunted. There's a large life-size marker that was laid over his grave, but very soon afterward, the stone cracked into several pieces. Now, that could have been vandals, but it's also been said it was his deathbed wish to be buried with his ancestors and that his request was not honored. They say Jakosat destroyed his own grave marker out of anger that he was trapped in Cleveland and unable to return home. Others wonder if he's upset because his remains might not even be there anymore. I found a site where historians said it's quite likely the old chief's remains would have been taken from the grave and used for medical experimentation, which was a very common practice in the 1840s.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In either case, while the original stone is still lying on the grave in its many broken pieces, a second large standing stone was added to the grave. Michael, I know you don't believe in ghosts. What do you think about this one?
Well, Jackasot is the Cleveland Indians' worst nightmare, I guess you could say. I've read stories where he kind of wanders over to the stadium over there and he affects or disturbs the games, not in favor of the Indians.
He probably does not like Chief Wahoo.
Yeah, well, you know what? I came across several reasons. One was that he didn't like Chief Wahoo being used as the mascot, which he doesn't have to worry about anymore because they officially got rid of him, although they're still around. And the other was that the stadium, of course, was buried on ancient Indian burial grounds, which I don't know if it is or not. So he's mad about that, or just he's mad that he's buried in Cleveland, and then they go ahead and name a team the Indians, you know, kind of stuck in Cleveland, and now he's got to watch an Indians game, you know, from across the street there. So he kind of wanders over there and disrupts the games. It's kind of funny. I guess he wanders the cemetery as well and, you know, creates all kinds of problems. Although I've never seen a specific story about something he's done or, you know, again, another haunting, like we were talking about the Merchant Ball, you know.
Right.
Having a specific story.
It sounds like there are some fans who might believe the superstition, because I did see online where his grave is often adorned with little tokens. Trying to apologize. What did you see?
I saw there's a lot of people place stones there. You know, I saw a Cleveland Indians keychain was on top of it, on top of the stone marker. Yeah, it's just all kinds of little trinkets, stuff like that.
Now, I haven't been there. I mean, is it walkable? Like, if you're going to a game, can you walk over and visit him?
The fans will park on the far side of the cemetery and walk directly through. It's just the cemetery is a small cemetery. It's almost like perfectly square, and there's a road that goes right down the center. And people walk that they park along, like I said, the far side and walk through it right to the stadium. The stadium is literally right across the street.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
And ghosts have no problem crossing the street. So,
well, no. and if you believe in ghosts, it sounds like he has plenty of reason to come over and be a little upset. Yeah. So,
I'm glad you mentioned the I had read that it was vandalized in 1907, his grave.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Well, that wasn't soon after then. That was quite several decades after.
Yeah. So,
So if he did it, he was sure patient about doing it because he waited.
Exactly. He waited a while.
So, all right, Michael, let's go to mystery number 3. This one is really interesting. There is a grave in Cleveland that belongs to a woman named Gloria Pressman, a real woman. The interesting thing is every website you see about the cemetery, they promote her as being one of their celebrities. So now she is reportedly a child movie star from the early days of film. And we're talking about Lakeview Cemetery, just one of the most historic cemeteries in the country. But you'll know something is up if you look for her on the Find a Grave website, because the first two words of her bio are alleged actress. That's because Gloria's connection to Hollywood might have completely been invented after her death. If you Google her online, you'll see Gloria Pressman credited with being a child movie star in the 20s and 30s, appearing in many of the original Little Rascals R Gang films as the girl with the Dutch boy hairstyle. Her filmography includes appearing in the first talking motion picture, The Jazz Singer, and she was said to have had roles in The Virginian with Gary Cooper and Moby Dick with John Barrymore. That was a very early version of Moby Dick. These bios said she used the stage name Mildred Jackson. Now, many have taken all of this information for granted. Like I said, she is listed in publications that detail famous people buried in Northeast Ohio. She's been mentioned as this child star in press releases about history-themed events in the Cleveland area. But here's the thing. Neither the name Gloria Pressman nor Mildred Jackson show up in the credits for any Hollywood movie. And that little girl in The Little Rascals with the Dutch boy haircut, her name was Mary Ann Jackson, not Mildred Jackson. And she was a real person with a verifiable life. She died in Los Angeles in 2003. She absolutely was not Gloria Pressman. So what is going on? I found a really interesting discussion about this on a webpage called MidwestGuest.com, where two people came out in support of Gloria's resume, saying they knew her. In 2014, a woman named Susie O'Reilly submitted a comment saying she worked for Gloria Pressman's husband, Dr. Wesley Pressman, in Shaker Heights in the 1970s. She said it was her understanding that Gloria's father worked at a movie studio in California, and he had gotten his daughter a role in Our Gang. She went on to say Gloria Pressman supposedly had a scrapbook full of clippings from that time in her childhood, although it sounds like this woman did not see that book herself. On that same web discussion, a woman named Linda Preston weighed in a year later in 2015, saying she knew Gloria and Wes Pressman and saw an autographed book that Gloria had filled with the names of people that included Gary Cooper from The Virginian and Jackie Cooper from Our Gang. But again, nobody could produce any actual evidence of this. So, Michael, I know you found this controversy when you were researching Gloria Pressman for your Facebook project. What do you think? Is Gloria the real deal or some strange invention on the internet that just got carried away?
Well, you, more than anybody else, knows that you have to have reliable sources. You know, for as long as you wrote stories and investigated them, you couldn't say much without having a source to back it up, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, did they have a scrapbook or an autograph book? First of all, that thing's got to be worth a lot of money.
Oh, yeah.
to lose something like that would be, wow. I mean, how do you lose something like that, or how does it get misplaced? But I guess it can happen, but without the evidence, I mean, everybody could claim anything, and I'm not saying they're lying. You know, maybe these people really did know them, and maybe these stories are even true, but without the evidence, you can't back it up. You wouldn't write anything like that, would you, if you were writing a story?
Absolutely not.
It would have to be alleged. It'd have to be a source says something like that, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so
I'm amazed at how many web pages mention her. I mean, somebody picked it up, and now it's just all over. You can see her listed as being
everywhere,
this child movie star. Michael, here's my idea, my theory on this. After reading the comments from those two women, I wonder if she actually did live in Los Angeles and that her dad was involved in the early film industry, and maybe she was an extra.
Could be.
And, you know, extras don't get credit. And back then, very minor actors often didn't get credit in the film either. And maybe, you know, somebody would say, hey, we need a family walking in the background while Gary Cooper is shooting the bad guy.
Right.
And this guy says, well, you know, my daughter's the right age. You know, honey, go walk across the street. And maybe she was just an extra.
I wonder if we could check the census records back there at those times and see if those, like you said, the family, if they did live there, if they're listed in the census, if that would show anything.
Some enterprising soul out there is going to do that for us because, you can do that. So if you're into family genealogy out there, folks, do this research. Write me at feedback@ohiomysteries.com and let us know what you find out, and we'll update people because there's got to be some clues to this. All right. Well, listen, we've got two final mysteries that are kind of similar, mysteries number 4 and 5. These are about two cases where competing cemeteries claim to have the same body. And it's funny how this can even happen. The first one we're going to bring up is Herbert Rice Penny. H.R. Penny was the brother of the department store tycoon J.C. Penny. He was vice president of his brother's company and worked to develop many of the stores. there isn't a whole lot out there about HR. The Penny children were born in Missouri, and JC spent his life between New York City and the West Coast. But at some point in his life, HR settled in Columbus, Ohio, and that's where he was when he died in 1966, leaving an estate worth almost $5 million. H.R. Penny was a big enough deal that two cemeteries in Columbus insist they've got him. Making matters a little confusing in this story are that both places have Greenlawn in their name because they're both on Greenlawn Avenue, though they are not affiliated in any way. One is Greenlawn Cemetery, so we're just going to call that one the cemetery. The other is Greenlawn Abbey. That's a century-old two-story mausoleum that's on the National Register of Historic Places. So going forward, Michael, we're just going to refer to that one as the mausoleum. So Michael learned about these two competing sites on the Find a Grave website, then went and visited both cemeteries to see if he could figure it out. Michael, tell us about your visit first to the mausoleum. What did they have to say about their claim to H.R. Penny?
I went there in 2015. They're not open to the public. You have to actually, if you want to get in there, you have to call somebody and they have to let you in and meet you there and let you in. And they're restoring the place, and the restoration has been going on for a number of years now. So it's not open every day like, you know, a regular cemetery or mausoleum might be. But anyway, I was there in 2015. We went on Memorial Day because that was the one day it was open to the public that year. And I got to HR's vault area there where he's interred, and there was a volunteer there. And I told him, there's a Find a Grave has two references to Penny, one being buried here and one being buried at the cemetery down the street. And he was aware of it. He was confident that Penny was buried in the mausoleum. And he told me what they did was they drilled a hole in his vault, in the front of his vault, and they inserted a metal rod, and the metal rod hit something, which to them meant that he was buried there, like a casket or something was in there. So that was proof enough for them, you know, and they were satisfied enough to say that he was buried there. And the official records there say he's buried there. And I actually came across a newspaper article that said, you know, when he died, that he was going to be interred in the mausoleum. So that was they were satisfied enough to say that he was still buried there because of the simple test that they performed. So I called Greenlawn Cemetery. When I talked to the guy at the cemetery, he said that he was confident he was buried at the cemetery with his wife, Anna, that they were in the mausoleum there. So I mentioned to the guy that they say that down the street, they say he's buried in the mausoleum. And he was confident. He was very polite about it, but he was confident that their records were correct at the cemetery and that H.R. Penny and his wife, Anna, are buried or interred in the mausoleum there. So
do you have a guess as to what's going on? I mean, obviously, they can't be in both places.
Right. Well, what I had heard was that when H.R. Penny died, he was indeed interred into the mausoleum. His wife died many years later, and she didn't want to be buried there because at that point, the mausoleum had been had run out of funding, and it was basically shut down. It was dirty. It had been vandalized, and she just didn't want to go in there. So the story goes that she opted to be buried in Greenlawn Cemetery. And when she was put in there, they went and got HR's body and put him in there with her. And that's how he ended up in the cemetery. Okay. But there's no record of this. I mean, you would think, I can see the mausoleum not having a record because it was run down. It wasn't really operating. Nobody would have kept a record of it, but they should have a record of him being transferred, you know, at the cemetery. You know, I would think.
Right.
But they say there's nothing there. I couldn't find him in anything. But like you said, maybe some of your listeners can track something down and come up with a piece of paper that says he was interred there along with his wife, whatever year she died. I'm not sure.
So our theory is that the wife was buried in the cemetery. They moved HR to the cemetery to be with her.
Correct.
But the mausoleum, which was just really in disrepair at the time and not
right.
really organized, just left their marker there
right.
and continues to be under the delusion that somebody is behind that marker.
Yeah, like I said, they inserted this rod in there and they hit something. So to them, whatever it hit, I guess they think is a casket or, I mean, I don't know what's, on the other side of that vault. I mean, the only way we're going to find out is to open one of these vaults and see what's there.
You know, we've got a very similar mystery with the gravesite of Philip Cody. So this is our last mystery. Philip Cody was the patriarch of the Cody clan. They came from Canada to the United States and begat the famous Buffalo Bill Cody. So Philip Cody settled in Cleveland. And while Buffalo Bill, his grandson, lived most of his life in Kansas, he was sent to Cleveland to live with family here when he was a teenager. Of course, he didn't stay here long. Buffalo Bill headed out west for his destiny. He was a Pony Express rider, then a soldier. He earned a reputation and his nickname for killing buffalo. But he's best known for being a showman. In 1883, he founded Buffalo Bill's Wild West, which was a theatrical touring company that traveled throughout the United States and Europe. So our mystery isn't about Buffalo Bill, though. It's about the guy who brought the family to the United States, his grandpa. And there are two cemeteries who claim to be the final resting place of the patriarch, East Cleveland Cemetery and Lakeview Cemetery.
Hello, this is Gary Chahot welcoming you to check out the French History Podcast. Our main show covers the history of France from the first humans until present. If you liked Mike Duncan's The History of Rome and wanted a similar program covering the land of beauty, culture, and love, we are exactly that. We also host world-renowned scholars who have delivered guest episodes on their specialties, including 18th-century pirates, revolutionary booksellers in 20th-century Paris, the special friendship between the Marquis de Lafayette and Thomas Jefferson, and numerous others. Learn what you love and listen to the French History Podcast today.
Now, the official burial records of East Cleveland Cemetery has Philip Cody buried there. They have a section number and a plot number, but there is no grave marker. It's the absolute reverse of that at Lakeview, where they have a grave marker for Philip Cody. But if you look for Grandpa in the official burial records for the cemetery, you won't find it. There's no official record of him there. So, Michael, I know you've looked into this. What's going on?
Yeah, this is interesting. I called the cemetery just real quick. I called Lakeview, and they never returned my call. So I'm going to actually have to go down there in person, I think, and drag somebody out to the – there's a Cody family plot out there at Lakeview. There's several Cody family members buried there. But so I guess the only way I'm going to get somebody to talk to me about that is to go out there and bring him to the plot and show him the grave marker there. But what I found out was I found out that originally Philip Cody, the grandfather, and his wife Lydia were buried in a cemetery on 105th Street at the corner of 105th and Euclid. This was an old cemetery. It was like a church there. It was almost just kind of a graveyard, small graveyard. What happened was, as expansion occurred, that's pretty much Cleveland Clinic now. That's all Cleveland Clinic now. But as things were expanding, the graveyard was closed and the bodies were removed. And Philip Cody's grandson made arrangements to have the bodies moved to East Cleveland Cemetery, which is why they have a record. So the stone is said to have been in this old cemetery too, as well as the bodies. So when the bodies were moved, I'm guessing the stone was moved, but where was the stone moved to? Was it moved to East Cleveland Cemetery? Did the grandson literally hold onto the stone? And then decide to put it in Lakeview later? I don't know what happened. So it's kind of a crazy thing why the stone's in Lakeview, and are the bodies really in East Cleveland, or were those moved to when the stone was moved, if it was moved? A lot of questions here.
Wow. So, yeah, who knows? Maybe they moved Philip to East Cleveland Cemetery, but somebody had kept the stone, and then they decided, well, we got to do something with this stone. Let's put it with the family plot. Maybe that's why there's a stone there, but maybe the bodies are really at East Cleveland.
That could be. Again, like with H.R. Penney, the only way is to dig it up and see. But yeah, I got a feeling that maybe the grandson held onto the stone and put it in the family plot at Lakeview. You know, as you said, patriarch of the family, you know, just kind of as a, you know, unity of family. He put it there with the rest of at least the stone. Maybe the bodies were too much to cost effect. You know, wasn't the right, you know, too much money to dig them up. I don't know.
Right.
You know, and bring them there too. Or maybe they did. I don't, you know, who knows?
Well, apparently they already dug them up, moved them once. They
once, right.
Yeah. Yeah. How many times can we do this?
Right, exactly.
Wow.
So we don't know where he's at. Well, I think they're buried in East Cleveland Cemetery, and for some reason the stone somehow ended up in Lakeview for some reason.
Yeah. Wow. So. Michael, we have managed to squeeze 5 mysteries into a single episode. Well done.
Great. This is a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for joining us, and please keep sharing your wonderful research for us.
I'm trying. Hopefully I got enough graves and to visit for the next few years anyway.
And if our listeners are not on your Facebook page yet, again, it's called Too Late for Autographs, Ohio.
Right.
And just go there. It's a wonderful history lesson. I am surprised by the posts that you've made of people that I don't know. And I find I consider myself a really good Ohio history lover. And when you post people that I haven't heard of before, it just delights me to think there's so much more that I can learn out there.
Yeah, that's why I said at the beginning, there's just so much history here that people just aren't aware of, just don't know it.
Well, that's it for tonight, listeners. For photos, news clippings, and more on this and every episode, hop on over to our website, ohiomysteries.com.
And that brings us to tonight's featured Ohio musical artist. Noah Smith was born and raised in Mount Oreb. And while he tours a lot, you know, Ohio's got competition for him, he always comes back home. You can follow this talented country artist on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And be sure to check out his website, NoahSmithMusic.com. Noah is working on some new music, so we'll have to revisit him next year. But for now, we love being able to share this tune off his last really awesome album.
At the start of the podcast, we played a clip of Noah's song, Ohio, That's All I Know. Here's the rest of that song. Enjoy, and we'll see you here next week for another episode of Ohio Mysteries.
Fire, telling stories about the wise men of the world, telling lies about the girls, laughing, telling jokes. I forgot how the punchline goes. Picking on that talk to me, someone passed the whiskey. Summer nights in Ohio, hell, that's all I know. Talk about Jesus. We'll talk about leaving this little town. I know somehow some of us are never gonna leave it. Nashville, Tennessee, and New York City shoot like the gas burned through on the fire. Them dreams went up in smoke. Summer nights in Ohio. Hell, that's all I know. Run on forever. We'll play our chasing games. Cops and robbers, hide and seek in the dark. Ready at night, I'll find you where you are. Summer nights in Ohio. Hell, that's all I know. In Ohio, hell, that's all I know. Out at the campfire, telling stories about the wise men of the world, telling lies about the girls, laughing, telling jokes.
jokes. I forgot how the punchline goes. Picking on that talk I made. Someone pass the whiskey. Summer nights in Ohio. Hell, that's all I know. Summer nights in Ohio. Hell, that's all I know.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.